Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Women Tech Charge is sponsored by Huawei. 20 years connecting the UK.
Right, so hi everyone, I'm Anne-Marie.
Woohoo!
And I'm the host of Women Tech Charge. Welcome to this musical episode. Today, my guest is the Imogen Heap. Yeah, the what to say, Imogen Heap. I know, we'll come to that.
What to say. She has never written another song that anybody cares about. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
She is a singer, songwriter, and audio engineer at the cutting edge of innovation in many ways, which I hope we can get to cover kind of as many of them as possible in this episode. And she has won 2 Grammys, one for producing and one for audio engineering. So welcome to the Women Tech Charge podcast, Imogen Heap.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming to my kitchen. I'm very happy to be here in this podcast. That's great. Lovely to see you.
And you. I'm so excited because, what do you say? Anytime I hear that song or anything like that, it takes me back to uni and it takes me back to some pretty good times. Yes. And I don't think little Anne-Marie would have ever imagined that I'd have kind of been here face to face. I think we can say face to face. It's pandemic face to face. Same difference. with the original voice, the what you say woman. I just have to say that.
What you say herself.
Yeah, the kind of the fan. That's I'm me. Fangirling a little bit hard to start this off. So let's lead up to what you say, because that was years ago.
That was.
You're now a musician. Was there ever anything else that you wanted to be when you were younger?
Well, it depends how far back you go. I mean, very, very early days, I fancied being an astronaut.
No way.
I did. It was either space or music. And music was a little bit more accessible with a piano in the house. So I didn't have to defy gravity to get into space. I could just walk to the piano. So yeah, piano won. And then I quickly discovered that the more instruments I learned when I eventually went to school, the more boring lessons I would get out of. So I learned the clarinet and the cello, and I learned some theory. I was doing a cassette tape-to-tape recorder, recording on one side, playing that thing that I just recorded, then recording on the other one. And eventually, if you could hear anything beyond the hiss of the cassette after multiple recording, then yeah, that was my early days of multi-track recording, I suppose.
That's so cool. So you've been pioneering the whole time.
Yeah, who knew?
Okay, that's amazing. So you learned all the instruments to avoid whatever lessons it was in primary school. Although, I don't know, primary school lessons to avoid, I feel like secondary school would have been the time to kind of kick up the whole avoiding lessons.
The lessons would happen after school, and I didn't really want to do lessons after school. I wanted to go and smoke down in, you know, whatever we weren't supposed to be doing, buying an illegal bottle of drink from the in the local spa. But I really loved playing the piano, and I always played the piano. And when I first went to boarding school, I was 12, and I was there for 3 years, and I wasn't like the most popular person in the school, to say the least. And so I spent a lot of time playing the piano, and a lot of time singing my woes about how I was being bullied, and kind of had some strange conversations with the devil when I was younger. All these kind of things that happen when you're on your own for long periods of time with the piano. But then eventually my friends, that later became my friends, discovered this thing that I did, and they loved it and they encouraged me. And that's when I started to write songs. And I discovered an Atari computer kind of in this cupboard that belonged to the music department. and nobody used it. Nobody knew how to use it, but it had a massive manual. I was the only person doing music GCSEs because nobody really liked Mr. Dodge. And it was either spend some time with my music teacher, but I think secretly he knew that I really wanted to do that. So he would send me into the cupboard as a kind of punishment for not listening or something when it was just me and him, or me being rude to him or something. But really, I think he knew that that's really what he should be doing.
That was your destiny. So shout out to Mr. Dodge. Thanks to Mr. Dodge, yeah. Why did he have an Atari in the cupboard in the music department?
I never asked him. I don't know. It was just, I guess the school, you know, is quite well funded, and they bought a computer, a music computer, and it had the sequencing software on it. And it was just amazing for me to be able to not have to write stuff, because I hated writing. I hated reading and I hated writing, especially notes, because it comes much quicker into the head and painstaking having to write it down. But I did do it. But then when I realised that there was no need anymore, because there was this computer and I could type it in with my keyboard fingers and the notes would pop up, I was just like, I'm never going back. And then being able to hear pieces of music that I might write for, you know, I did write bits of music for orchestra because I had to, you know, that was part of the school thing. And it, yeah, changed my life.
That's amazing. And that's still your thing today, though, I guess. It's still kind of Imogen from boarding school that we see out with the instruments on TV and in places, right?
Yeah, except I'm less and less wanting to sit in front of the computer. You know, it's kind of boring now. Back then it was a novelty. Now it's like I spend my whole life in front of a computer. I don't really want to sit. So I'm kind of trying to explore all kinds of ways to remove myself from the computer by developing some musical gloves so that I can paint music.
You don't want to be in front of that kind of PC, but you want to be holding the PC.
Yeah, I want to be the human interface. Get rid of all this sitting around hunched over.
What do you enjoy the most about audio engineering? It's more for anyone that's never considered this, never thought about it, never kind of, we listen to music so much, the thought behind the process and all that goes into it is not something that many people will have considered or even kind of seen themselves in. So what is the magic? What is it that's the best bit of it? What do you enjoy the most? Why is that what you've gravitated towards?
I guess the joy of it was just instead of having to wait for like a gang of people to turn up and be able to record a song, you can just go and do it yourself. You can explore, and happy accidents can happen if sometimes you don't really know how to do stuff that well, that you think, oh, that's an interesting sound. I'm going to record that. It would have been quite a lot to learn. I just got lucky that the kind of education I got and that I went to the Brit School and I learned about engineering there gave me a leg up so that I did have the possibility to go into a studio when I was 18 and I knew what I was talking about, which meant I didn't have producers breathing over my neck.
And you could be more in control. Yeah, I think that is kind of education, or knowledge is power, isn't it, really, on that, especially with the music scene.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about the Mimu gloves? You started them off, you've been developing them since 2011?
So these gloves were like the extension of what I was starting to do on stage by trying to remove myself from base camp. So I have a ton of gear when I was touring before the gloves, where I'd have like keyboards and recording equipment, loopers, microphones all over the place. And then I saw this guy who was a glass harmonica player, which is basically like lots of wine glasses, and he would tune them all. And how he mic'd them up was he put little lapel microphones that you'd usually stick on your chest or body mics. And I would he stuck it on his wrist so that then they would get the sound coming from the wine glass. And I was like, that is genius. I'm going to do that. So I put two of these things on my wrists and I went around and recorded lots of instruments, you know, my imbira, guitar, drums. If someone was playing them, I could just like walk up to somebody and record them. But the thing about it was I had to, in order to actually press record, I had to run back to base station, press a button and then go and record them. And then come back, which is a bit silly. So I tried all these like different remote options. There's this thing called iCubix, which took me ages to program and get all these little devices set up. And it just took so long that in the end, I was like, I wish there was just some way that I could just like open my hand and catch the sound. And then I realized that the technology is available to do that, and you can build that kind of stuff. So I got an awesome team together led by this guy in the beginning called Tom Mitchell, who was a friend's brother. And he got a grant from the University of West England of 10 grand to take an existing fiber optic glove and to create the beginnings of what we now have as a software called Glover, where he started off with a neural network. So he would basically create a memory of
a snapshot of in what state the fiber optics were in inside the fingers. So if you were like doing an OK sign or a punch or a fist or a, you know, two finger point or whatever, then it would recognize that. So you could recall that back and go like, OK, record is closed fist and release is open hand. So from that, we then realized that we quickly needed to develop our own glove because you couldn't do any kind of movement detection. It only had posture recognition. Yeah. So then we could do up, down, left, right, you know, choose zones. And then we had to add on an accelerometer so that we could, get accelerometer peaks for drum triggers. And then we wanted lights for feedback and buzzers for feedback so you could tell where in a position you were. So you kind of get haptic feedback on a command, like an affirmation. Okay, this is, you have done that record sound. And then, you know, 10 years later, here we are. And then we're selling them. And, you know, we have 150 glovers in the world now. Quite exciting.
Nice. Are people using them for non-musical things?
So other people are using them for visuals. Like we have one of our glovers. She's also very much part of the team. She's called Chagall. And she has a show which she also generates visuals using the gloves and a whole bodysuit, actually. She's gone into the rest of the body. So she's building a separate system, which is integrating Glover, but with other external interfaces. But you can do all that within Glover. So actually, Glover is very, very powerful. That's the, in a way, the jewel of the crown that hopefully toward the end of the year we'll have as a standalone software so that people can take any input. It could be a leap motion, you might have a leap motion or an iPhone or some other controller, and you can use Glover as the magic brain that connects you to your music software or your visual software.
Would people be able to put Glover into kind of, I guess, maybe not their own glove, but like their own hats or their own socks? Like, is that
yeah, if you're a maker or a hacker, you can get out there and, you know, get a Raspberry Pi or whatever and stick some bits onto your sock.
Women Tech Charge is sponsored by Huawei. 20 years connecting the UK.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The other thing, I guess, so you've almost extended that a little bit with Mycelia.
Yeah, so Mycelia is the grand vision of a future music ecosystem. But what's come out of all of that after about 5 years now of development is essentially a digital identity tool for music makers. It's a place to put in information about yourself that could be useful to anyone should they need to find it. So, for example, even if you were doing an interview with me, it would have in my creative passport. It has all my skills, it has the brands that I've worked with, it has my latest biography, it has my inspirations, it has people I've worked with, it has related content, albums, projects, and you could scan through that and go, oh, Imogen, what's hablab.tv? And I'll be like, oh, let me tell you all about it. Or you could be like, oh, Imogen, I see here you worked with IBM, what's all that about? And you'd be like, let me tell you about it. So it's basically giving everyone the tools to be able to get what they need from an artist or a music maker. You don't have to be like all bells and whistles. You could be just an engineer. You could be a producer. You could be a coder. You could be a clarinetist. Anything to do with music making, you should have one of these, because essentially there's no way for the industry to communicate with masses of us on any meaningful level, because we're basically all separate. Ends of the conversation could be like on a Zoom call or on an end of an email or through Twitter or through LinkedIn. There's no easy way to approach us, and there's no easy way for us to be able to organize to work with services on our own terms.
Helping to level up or step up the collaboration that would be able to happen between music or creatives.
between creators and services, really. There hasn't been much innovation outside of digital streaming services for music, for example. There's loads of possibilities in all kinds of different services that we could be doing live shows in right now, but we don't know where they are or what their deal terms are, and they don't know how to reach us. There's no real innovation around how do you find people to work with? How do you find that missing songwriter who might live just down the road from you or who might have a free day in the window that you have a free day to collaborate, who you both know somebody? You know, there's just no way of knowing that stuff. And we all have these incredible connections. Hopefully what musicians will first of all get is the chance to just put down information that they're constantly having to repeat themselves, like biography, skill sets, or, you know, your basic numbers that you need to have if you're going to release music commercially in the UK or around the world. You have to have a number connected to your songwriting or connected to your performer self or your producer self. There's all these different like entities that help you get money. But actually, there's no core point just for you that belongs to you. So it's to help all the services and to help you.
That's pretty cool. Do you feel like the pandemic and the way that kind of people have been producing music has had to, the way people have been living has had to change, but the way that they've been producing music has had to change? Do you feel like there's more scope or kind of a more burning need for Mycelia?
The thing that it's called the creative passport, and there is definitely more need now than ever. If you could have the creative passport now, it's a fundamental layer. It's like your identity. You've got an identity. There you are, I'm chatting to you online now. That's the only version of you there is in the world, as far as I know, unless you've got some kind of crazy clone thing going on. But online, there is no center point for you. You are fragmented across multiple different locations, small tweets or on a LinkedIn or on somebody's profile page somewhere. There's no center point for you. And that's the problem with the whole of the internet. Completely, is that we have no way of independently, individually, on our own terms, self-sovereign identity, be able to play a part in that digital space unless we're under the wings of other people. And the creative passport is one of those. On our own terms, we can become open for business. We can have information that people need. We can charge people for that information. So imagine Spotify. You could have a whole entirely new way of exploring the music on Spotify. If Spotify pulled in information from your creative passport, it could have who my inspirations are. So if you clicked on Imogen Heap, there could be another tab which could say inspired by, instead of their algorithms pretending on who I might be inspired by. I think Apple Music used to do that. You could go, oh, Imogen Heap's inspired by Guy Sigsworth, Zoe Keating, Pharrell, you know, the kind of some people you might know, some people you might not know. And you would go on this crazy discovery trail. But there's no, that information doesn't exist. It's information that Spotify would be great for their service because fans would love to explore those people that they wouldn't ordinarily find. And you could get a piece of a tiny, tiny bit of micropayment for the use of that information because it's been useful to Spotify.
And is that where the blockchain element comes in? Because I guess blockchain is still part of the elevator pitch on Mycelia.
Ah, yeah. So blockchain was the inspiration 5 or 6 years ago. I saw a technology that could solve a lot of the problems around data discrepancy, around multiple organizations holding different data sets and no one being correct, and no way of me going in there to suggest a correct version of a song title.
I think that's the other thing. It's like there's so many different people kind of run away with themselves, and then this kind of lie gets propagated across everywhere. So I have this. I have a Wikipedia page, and at no point since it's been open has the whole thing been correct.
People have got like so little time, haven't they, on this planet? Let's not waste it with just bad data. Let's just get it right, get it once right, and then update that information when we need. And instead of it updating across, you know, you going into multiple platforms for their benefits to update information about yourself, update it from one place that's your place that all the other places, you know, connect to.
But if it's services focused rather than just music focused, it's for you to also see the different options and saying, well, that person's an audio engineer, or that person's a producer, or that person's in, I don't know if you'd have A&R people on it, but being able to see all the different options, it's a kind of a golden source, like a truth as per that person that they can update, they own. And this idea of owning the data around yourself, I know it's definitely something that we're still not quite there yet.
There's this guy called Yaron Lanier. He talks about this concept of data dignity, which I love, that this is the truth. This is, you should have the
the authorship over what happens to your personal data. And if people are using it, that maybe they can use it, but it's under your terms. Or maybe you have brokers, you know, on under what terms you allow people to share your data.
That idea of control is brilliant. So with Mycelia, you've got this new tool, and it's not just about the people. I guess it's always also about the song, right? If you've got that data and all of it, then that means you can always tie people to you can look at a song and look at the people around it rather than just looking at the people.
Yeah. So I suppose the long-term grand vision would be that the creative passport, by way of dealing with your independent identity, your details about yourself, that you will then be able to go in and author or change or suggest changes or additions to a database of songs, a database of work. So the initial grand vision of Mycelia, which was 6 years ago, in desperation of just wondering how the hell I was going to do all the admin now that I was a mum. So I had this like newborn baby. And that's when this idea of this mycelial network, this kind of living organism of good data, this ground layer of information needed to exist in order for the music industry above it to grow and shape and make sense and flourish. Because at the moment, we don't have that core underpinning information like I did, you know, information about the people that make the songs and the songs themselves. There's two separate sets of stuff. So we realized that in order to try to approach the grand database of all works, I mean, that's been tried and failed many times. And really, this idea of what blockchain could have done for that was the inspiration. But then after a few years, we realized there's just no chance that, you know, little old me has got any hope in hell of attacking that bit of it. But what we can do is make it possible for music makers to be the change and to get themselves in order, get their data organized and ready for action. Because when we come together as the many millions that we are around the world and we become organized, we have a huge opportunity where services will come and develop things for us because it makes monetary sense for them. And because we could become the micro investors of the future services that we need, you know, and keeping that wealth within the community. But the database of works is coming. There's a few different sources that are attempting it. And we just want to be ready with the creative passport so that we can be there to go, okay, I am Imogen Heap, or I am Zoe Keating, or I am Ariana Grande, or whoever you are, can go in there and fact check data, basically, and have the authorship to do that.
I love that. I think we can definitely, it's definitely all achievable. I hope anyone listening has been inspired to maybe kind of take up the Mycelia kind of baton and continue on. But I think that fact checking kind of golden source is 100% something that we need to ensure that we've got. So I feel like you know what's happening next. You've got the future. You're creating the future, even if you don't know what it is. What happens next, Imogen? What's coming next?
Well, there is so many good things coming. I think actually what's exciting about right now is that the fact that we can't be physically together so much, that those venues we can't be in, is hugely progressing the development in mixed reality and the possibilities for music makers. So that whole space of augmented mixed reality, virtual reality, trying to super push the development so that we can easily license music in that space. There's no precedence for it at the moment. It's very hard. It's like the services can't really create the content because they can't get permissions to use the song because it's these organizations that hold the rights, and there's no way for them to talk to the artists at large. Again, another reason why we need the creative passport to make that shift. But there are loads of great services, and one of the ones that I explored was this great company called Wave XR about 3 years ago. They filmed a little concert that I did in the barn that I was putting together for the creative passport, and they shot a point cloud video, which basically meant that I looked a bit like a hologram, and I did these three songs. And people, it really changed my view of the VR space, because I think previously I thought it was like, you know, it's never going to be as good as physical, obviously. But actually it's not even trying to compete. It's just it's a completely different experience. And actually, because even just at the very basic right now, you have a headset and you've got your controllers in your hands, you can do a wireframe of a person and pretty much understand how they're standing, how they're moving. So actually it's a very personal experience to have a conversation with somebody in VR, even if you are a cat or a dog or a panda or however you're perceived. And I think in that experience, I watched my own show in the audience, and somebody walked up to me, saw my name, Imogen,
as above my cat head and said, "Are you Imogen Heap?" And I was like, "Yeah, I am." And they were like, "Oh my God, this is so weird. You're like there on the stage, but you're here next to me." And I was like, "Yeah, I know. Anyway, can we stop talking? Because I really want to watch the show." It's like, "Oh yeah, yeah, sorry." And they moved away virtually. And then met me in the foyer. And we had this conversation. We had this meeting. And other people would come in the foyer and be like, "Oh my God, Imogen Heap, hey, I came and saw you in New York." And we'd have a conversation. And by the end of it, there were like 30 people congregated around me in the foyer of this virtual place. I was in my home. They were wherever they are. And it was just fascinating. And it actually gave me the confidence to then go on and tour after that, because I hadn't interacted with my fans for so long, you know, giving birth and kind of, you know, just life taking a crazy turn. And so it was like we were backstage, and I had this conversation about technology, and it gave me hope.
What a place to end. Imogen Heap, there is hope. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much for joining me on Women Take Charge. What you say?
What you say?
It's been brilliant. Thank you very much, Imogen.
Thank you.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.